Thank you, Chair. And today, I think I have the distinction as the first speaker speaking in the symposium in a different language. Sorry for that, but of course, I'm sure that you will appreciate the fact that I'm not in a position to communicate in French. Let me start my presentation by initially expressing my thanks to the organizers, first for choosing this topic and also giving me an opportunity to express my views or share my views on this topic. Health is now approached by states from different perspectives, and some view it as a development issue. Health is also used as a strategic tool, and health is also used as a trade tool, and it's also perceived as a human right. So as a result, health is increasingly figuring as a priority agenda in the foreign policy. The General Assembly, UN General Assembly, Resolution 62/33 in 2008, requests Secretary General to prepare a report on foreign health, foreign policy and health in close collaboration with the WHO. In this report, basically identified health-related challenges that must be addressed by the foreign policy makers and the key foreign policy issues that have a significant impact on health. This report was placed before the UN General Assembly in 2009. Among the seven health-related challenges identified by the report, one is ensuring access to affordable medicines. And there is one more identified challenge which has close relation with the access to medicine, that is the meeting the health-related Millennium Development Goals. So the discussion on access to medicine is no more confined to WHO and UN General Assembly. Apart from the usual forums like UN General Assembly, WHO, WIPO, or WTO, and even Human Rights Council, this issue is figuring in more and more international organizations, as well as regional organizations like UNODC, World Customs Organizations, International Postal Union, Interpol, APEC, ASEAN, etc. The growing interest shown by many of these organizations are not driven by the public health considerations. Let me come back to that point later. In the next 20 minutes or something, I'll make an attempt to outline the critical challenges with regard to ensuring access to medicine in the context of international IP regime. I approach this issue from a developing country perspective in the light of international obligations / responsibilities with regard to right to health and right to development. Let me move to my first slide. That's basically the international legal and policy framework related to access to medicine. Health is considered as a development issue and no more discussed in isolation. The 66th World Health Assembly adopted a resolution titled Health in the Post-2015 UN Development Agenda. This same resolution urges the member state to ensure that the health is central to the post-2015 UN Development Agenda. The UN General Assembly resolution adopted in December 2012 on global health and foreign policy. This particular resolution recognizes that improving the social protection towards universal coverage is an investment in people that empowers them to adjust to changes in the economy and in the labor market and helps support a transition to a more sustainable, inclusive, and equitable economy. Therefore, the health is, apart from discussing it in the post-development, post-2015 context, it is also discussed very much within WHO as well as in International Labour Organization as a agenda for in the context of social universal health coverage. So this particular resolution has a specific reference to access to medicine. Let me quote. The resolution states, noting the particular concern that for millions of people, the right to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health, including access to medicines, remains a distant goal, that especially for children and those living in poverty. The likelihood of achieving this goal is becoming increasingly remote, that millions of people are driven below the poverty line each year because of the catastrophic out-of-pocket payments for the healthcare, and that excessive out-of-pocket payments can discourage impoverished from seeking or continuing care. So this is an important point in majority of the world population, the nature of health spending is out of pocket, and that means out of their savings, and which can push the people into poverty line. And there is a WHO study which shows that around 100 million people are pushed below poverty line every year due to the catastrophic payment related to health. So further, the resolution acknowledges the universal health coverage implies that it basically spells out the content, meaning and content of the universal health coverage, implies that all the people have access without discrimination to nationally determined set of the needs, promotive, preventive, curative, and rehabilitative basic health services and essential, safe, affordable, effective, and quality medicines, while ensuring that the use of these services does not expose the users to financial hardship, with a special emphasis on poor, vulnerable, and marginalized segmentation of the population. So it's very clear. And similarly, there are many declarations, including the Rio Declaration on Social Determinants of Health, the political declaration on non-communicable disease, the political declaration which earlier mentioned here on HIV/AIDS of 2011, and various WHO resolutions related to non-neglected tropical disease, etc., clearly spells out the need for ensuring access to affordable medicines. And it's also important, access to medicine is now considered as part of the right to health. And it's important to note down Article 12D of International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, which clearly states that the steps to be taken by the states, parties to the present covenant, to achieve the full realization of the right shall include those necessary for the creation of conditions which would assure to all medical services and medical attention in the event of sickness. So you cannot provide a medical services without providing medicines or the related health products. So during the last decades, so much progress has achieved to look at access to medicine within the global, within the human rights framework. The latest report of the rapporteur to, special rapporteur of Right to Health is on access to medicine. This report was introduced at the 23rd session of Human Rights Council on the 27th of May 2013, means barely 2 weeks ago. This report has two parts, and the first part, the rapporteur reviews the international legal framework and it applies to access to medicines. And the rapporteur clearly states that access to affordable and quality medicines and medical care in the event of sickness, as well as the prevention, treatment, and control of disease are central elements for the enjoyment of right to health. Further, the report calls upon states to shift from the dominant market-oriented perspectives on access to medicine towards a right-to-health paradigm in promoting access to medicines. In the second session of the report, the rapporteur identified certain determinants on access to medicines. These determinants include the following: local production of medicines, price regulations, medicines list, procurement, distribution, rational and appropriate use and quality of medicines. It is very clear that there are various determinants on access to medicines. However, international obligation on intellectual property, trade, and investment are main barriers to ensure sustainable availability of medicines, affordable medicines, because the international obligation in these three areas left a little policy space for developing countries to pursue a self-sufficiency strategy in the production and distribution of medicines. In terms of a procurement strategy, you can have it. Nothing prevents you from doing it. But if you want to produce a medicine which is protected by a patent, then you will come under tremendous pressure, and you may be infringing an international obligation. This may call for international sanctions. So this is the constraint. So in other words, the international obligation in this area of IP, investment, and trade in a way incapacitate developing countries from fulfilling its obligations on right to health and even right to enjoy the progress of scientific progress guaranteed under Article 15 of International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. So both the trade and investment rules took away much of the policy space to develop local manufacturing in individual developing countries or even to develop a regional hub wherever the economy of scale cannot be achieved within the in a particular country. While trade liberalization through multilateral and bilateral trade agreements during the last 18 years or so took away much of the policy space on tariffs. Tariff means to impose the import duty. The policy advice in this area focuses on the elimination of tariffs to facilitate access to medicine. This is a short-sighted advice, and it took away the important tool to encourage local production. Similarly, the infamous bilateral investment treaties, armed with investor-state dispute mechanism, considerably reduces the policy space to induce a local production in developing countries. For instance, some of these treaties prohibits performance requirements, one of the tools used by many developed countries and even developing countries to build a manufacturing sector, especially in pharmaceutical sector. Bilateral investment treaty also interface with intellectual property rights, which I'll take 2 minutes to explain. Recently, the pharmaceutical multinational company called Eli Lilly sued the Canadian government under the NAFTA investment dispute chapter, citing that the Canadian court struck down two of its patent application. The particular company obtained a patent, but someone challenged the patent in a court, and court struck down the patent, saying that this patent is not eligible for, this patent application is not eligible for patent protection, and interpreted law in a particular way. It was very clear, it was a court interfered, and court is supposed to act independently based on the law as well as on evidence. And Eli Lilly interpreted it as this is an investment which has been taken away by the court order, and sued the Canadian government. And recently, I came across a advice from a well-known legal firm. I think it's it's a very famous international law firm, advising its clients in the wake of issuance of compulsory license in India, to saying its clients, if the compulsory license is issued again, you can use the investment treaties under that, the investor-state dispute against the government of India, to prevent government of India from issuing a compulsory license. So investment treaties can be used to prevent access to medicine. And it's very clear that the investment treaties have been used against the measures taken by many governments on tobacco control. The government of Uruguay, Norway, Australia are facing the heat, and many more governments may come under that if they follow the same strategy. So however, my focus is on IP protection. Let me start with a few examples illustrating the typical response of developed countries in various international organizations while discussing concerns related to medicine. So generally, developed countries opposes any advancement on any discussion which in a way advance the cause of access to medicine. So last week, as mentioned earlier, Human Rights Council adopted a resolution on access to medicine, clearly acknowledging the report of the Special Rapporteur on Health. This resolution adopted through an voting. Both EU and US abstained from voting. The main reason for the difference of opinion came up with regard to a US proposal to limit the scope of the resolution to only essential medicines. As per the US proposal, US made a proposal on the operational paragraph 5 of the resolution, stating that to implement where they do not exist, to establish national health framework that ensures for all without discrimination to medicines that are affordable, safe, efficacious, and of quality. US wanted to add a word called in particular essential medicine before the word that are affordable, safe, efficacious, and of quality. So basically wanted to limit the scope of the resolution only to address the cause of essential medicines. The international obligation on access to medicines are not restricted only to essential medicines. The US proposal to restrict the scope of resolution to essential medicine is an attempt to minimize the access to medicines entitlement to essential medicines. It's very clear that confining to essential medicine will not solve the issue of access to medicines. Let me just cite three facts for that to support my argument. The essential medicine list, as as the name shows, is a list of bare minimum requirements. And therefore, it is always contains a list of all medicines without patent protection. A WHO study shown that it's an, I think it's published now. I have seen it as an unpublished copy. Around 96% of the medicines are out of patent. So therefore, and another study shows that out of 359 list of the WHO list, the 17th edition contains 359 medicines. Out of that, around 79 medicines only address the question of problems of NCDs. Much of it is addressing the communicable diseases. Therefore, if you confine to essential medicine lists, a range of drugs which is out there, especially the new drugs, you won't able to use the human rights framework. And further, the selection criteria for essential medicine at WHO includes cost effectiveness. So many times the price, the drugs which is having a high price, always kept out of the WHO essential list of medicines, and it took long struggle to include some of these HIV/AIDS medicine in the late 90s to be part of the essential list of medicine. And another study shows that study by Knowledge Ecology International shows that in 2011 WHO model essential medicine list, there were zero cancer drugs on the main list and 20 products on the complementary list. So in the, during the since 2000, around 100 new medicines were approved by the USFDA for cancer alone. So if you confine yourself to essential medicine list and you are in a way preventing the issuance of a compulsory license for any medicines other than essential medicine list, then much of these medicines which are new medicine and very effective medicines would be out of your out of reach of many people. One of the important example I can tell you is that imatinib mesylate. This is a very good drug for the use of for the treatment of chronic myeloid leukemia. This drug is yet to be part of the essential list of medicine, even though it got its marketing approval sometime in around 2000. After 13 years, still we have not included this particular drug in the essential list of medicine, and there is campaign going on to include it in the essential list of medicine. So similarly, let me move to the next example. That's of LDC, extension of TRIPS, non-implementation transition period. Article 66.1 of the TRIPS agreement is very clear. Whenever there is an LDC country, that means a least developed country, applied to the TRIPS Council, the council for an extension of the non-implementation of TRIPS agreement, the LDC is legal under the TRIPS agreement, LDC, least developed countries need not implement the TRIPS agreement. No provisions of the TRIPS agreement are binding upon the LDCs. So this deadline almost got over around June of this month of 2013. So the LDCs applied for an extension. Of course, they got it. But the story goes like this. As per the TRIPS agreement, whenever they apply, the Council for TRIPS shall, upon duly motivated request by a least developed country member, accord extension of this period. It's very clear, shall. There is no room for any kind of negotiations there. But still, however, the LDCs as a group applied for an extension. After the submission of their duly motivated request, these LDCs were forced into a negotiation with developed countries, the so-called green room negotiation, excluding vast majority of the WHO membership from that negotiation. So none of the developing countries were part of that decision making. And they got an extension of late with a few conditions. So we can dispute on that conditions. And one of the condition is that there is no condition as such. But the EU says that during this particular period, the least developed countries cannot roll back on the existing level of IP protection. There is, if you read the decision, you don't find such a condition. They just express their desire. They just express their determination to continue with the IP protection. They never committed. So there is a room for rollback. But EU says, no, it's not like that. But it was very clear, people who participated in the negotiation, the understanding is very clear. The moment you don't use the word commitment, it's very clear. You can roll back. Another example is that in 2012, November, EU and US oppose any further process to take forward the recommendation of consultative expert working group to establish an international framework to ensure sustainable financing to meet the R&D needs of developing countries. CEWG made a set of recommendations to meet the unmet health R&D needs of developing countries by creating a framework for coordination, prioritization, and sustainable funding for R&D. The mechanism is to follow an open innovation approach where the R&D outcomes are free for further use without any legal and contractual obligations. This new R&D model would have delinked the cost of R&D from the price of the product and put in practice a new R&D model to address the unmet R&D needs of developing countries. This is important because the patent-oriented R&D model failed to deliver medicines which is predominantly affects the developing countries. Why is it so failed? The whole philosophy of patent is that you have a monopoly, so that gives you a power to charge high prices, and I recoup my expenditure on R&D. That itself is questionable. Who ultimately, no one knows what is the exact cost of R&D. But still, if you buy that argument, still, the logic is that patent gives you the monopoly and you can recoup the money. But in developing countries, people do not have the purchasing power. So this model does not work there. And as a result, one of the important classical study where the DNDA and MSF did in 1998 showed that only 1% of the drug introduced from 71 to 98 address the problems of developing countries. But this finding was further validated by the WHO-appointed Commission on Intellectual Property, Public Health, and Innovation. So as a result, there was a discussion to set up a new mechanism wherein which you can address this, what you call the typical cases of market failure. Those areas of diseases which is market failure is an important phenomena. How do you address that phenomena? So you have to have a new model for R&D. So that has been blocked by EU and US. But it's very clear that because that any change in that area is not going to affect anyway the profitability of pharmaceutical industry because they are not making any money in that area. But the worry is that this will signal, it will have a signaling effect, and this would change the predominant IP-oriented R&D model, which now gives a power for pharmaceutical company to have as much as profit they can. And now let me, it's also a fact that whenever developing countries use TRIPS flexibilities, developed countries termed it as a misuse of TRIPS flexibilities. Responses of EU and US on the issuance of compulsory license in Thailand are a case in point. There are examples clearly show that when it comes to IP, developed countries not only want status quo, but further upward movement of IP protection and standards, at times even beyond their own legal requirement. The IP protection which was asked, developing countries were asked to undertake IP protection which even goes well beyond what is required, what is there in the developed countries. Let me examine whether there is any empirical evidence in this panic approach towards IP, towards end of my presentation. Let me now spend a few minutes on the landscape of IP and its implications on access to medicine. It's important, how is excessive IP affects? IP protection incapacitates state from fulfilling its obligation on right to health on the following ways. It eliminates competition in the pharmaceutical market and lead to monopoly price. It retards the innovation and encourages rent seeking through obtainment of multiple patents on medicines. The high prices of medicine with patent protection states may not able to make public provision for medicines. And it also incapacitates state to fulfill its obligation under Article 15.1, which recognizes the state's parties to the present covenant, recognize the right of everyone to enjoy the benefit of scientific progress and its applications. Apart from the patent, trademark, and data exclusivity protection also plays an important role in the promotion of monopoly in the market. In the absence of patent protection, pharmaceutical companies use data exclusivity or trademark to maintain monopoly in the market. However, my focus is on patent protection. As mentioned above, IP issues related to medicines are not confined to TRIPS alone. However, TRIPS is the central agreement which establishes the common minimum obligations on developing countries with regard to patent protection. So utilization of TRIPS flexibilities is advocated as a way forward to find a balance between obligations on right to health and access to medicines. Doha Declaration and so many resolutions and all declarations stress the need for TRIPS flexibilities. However, it is not a viable option for many developing countries. So the limitations on the, there are various constraints to use the flexibilities. I'm not explaining due to time constraints. The important constraint is the political pressure faced by the developing countries, from the developed countries. And no gains, but cost on after the implementation of the TRIPS agreement. Let me just quote the new study by DNDA, and it shows that only 4 new chemical entities have come into the market from 2001 to 2010 to address the problems of developing countries. So review of the, further, the use of compulsory license also have come down. So as a result, against this background, basically there was a finding by the UNDP Commission on Global Commission on HIV and HIV/AIDS and Law. The commission conclude its finding by stating, let me quote, TRIPS has failed to encourage and reward the kind of innovation that makes more effective pharmaceutical products available to the poor, including for neglected diseases. Countries must therefore develop, agree, and invest in new systems that genuinely serve this purpose, prioritizing the most promising approaches, including a new pharmaceutical R&D treaty and the promotion of open source discovery. And it goes further and calls upon the countries to suspend the TRIPS agreement, operationalization of the agreement, and to put a review mechanism. And it should be appointed by the UN Secretary General. So this is not the end of the story. TRIPS is a slippery slope. We thought that with the TRIPS agreement, that's a full stop. But it went further. All the flexibilities within the TRIPS agreement were further reduced through the various international initiatives, mainly through the free trade agreements. I'm not explaining that. Then further, it's, again, the IP enforcement initiative. So free trade agreement, by and large, looked at on the IP protection part. Then you have the IP enforcement landscape, which is no more confined to all these organizations like WIPO, WTO, or WHO. It goes beyond that. Almost all multilateral organizations have been captured by the vested interest, mainly by the industry, and set it up something called a public-private partnership to enforce intellectual property rights. And this typical statement goes like this: combating the global scourge of fake medicines, which threatens the health of millions of people, focus of a landmark agreement between Interpol and 29 of the world's largest pharmaceutical industry. Look, this is Interpol. It's supposed to deal with international criminal law, and it's joining hands with the private sector and compromising completely the neutrality of criminal investigation. And if you ask Interpol, can I have 3 more minutes? Okay. If you ask Interpol to explain what exactly the fake medicine, they don't have an explanation to offer. And all this data quoted by Interpol or any other international organization working on medicine, this fake medicine or fraudulent medicine or falsified medicines, they're caught from one source called Pharmaceutical Security Institute, an institute set up by 12 research-based pharmaceutical companies based in US. So let me now move to the last part of my presentation. Why is it happening? It's happening because of the industry captures the policy making. How is it happening? So this is one of the quote from a Pfizer submission to 4 weeks ago. Pfizer made a submission to the US subcommittee on international trade. where it asked for the US government to exert bilateral pressure on India. And this letter is followed by another 17 trade organizations, trade associations, including Pharma. I think Sanofi is a member to Pharma because of its presence in US. I don't know exactly, but Pharma is a signatory to this letter, wrote to Obama, again to exert bilateral pressure. What are they worried about? They are mainly worried about a court order. Supreme Court of India ordered that the Novartis patent application on imatinib mesylate is invalid in India because an earlier patent application of 1994 disclosed everything about the invention. So it cannot claim patent on it. So I beg two more minutes and ending it by saying that there is no empirical evidence to support the industry's argument. The basically industry's argument is that developing countries are competing with us and our market will lose and loss of jobs will happen in developed countries, etc., etc. But look at the WHO, WIPO, and WTO published a joint study, and the joint study shows that the developing countries accounts only 20% of the export in medical products, not even pharmaceutical products. If you took the whole health products, it covers only 20%, and the import only 30%. And further, the World Medicine Report basically suggests that, World Medicine Situation Report suggests that 16% of the population in high-income countries basically accounts for the 78% of the pharmaceutical consumption. So this clearly shows that nothing will happen, even if there is no patent in developing countries. And it's not going to affect the pharmaceutical country. Then why industry? Industry knows it very well. Why is it so? Industry wants to protect its high profit in developed countries. So they don't want any questions to be raised from the developed countries. In order to protect the profitability, they are holding a vast majority of the population at ransom. And in a way, to giving a kind of a death penalty without a trial for the majority of the people in developing countries. And in the case of HIV/AIDS, we have seen it. Many deaths could have been avoided, but it happened because of the patent rights in many of the African countries. Let me just conclude by saying that what's the way forward? The way forward is that they prevent industry capture in foreign policy making and make the foreign policy based on independent and verifiable evidence. Ensure transparency and accountability of foreign policy making, and also hold the corporations accountable, even criminally accountable for them. Impose a criminal penalty in case of violations committing, human rights violations committing abroad. And lastly, I would say that it's important for the industry to change its business model, especially in the, you know, this kind of business model is completely not sustainable, especially in Europe, even in Europe, because in the type of crisis, Eurozone crisis we are, the people are undergoing here, which cannot support this kind of business model. And there should be a solution to that, wherein which the, what you call it in the trade terms, a win-win situation. The industry also win, the people also should win. Thank you.